How was your weekend?
It's actually a pretty productive weekend.
Good.
I got a couple of go-getters, so I got 250 already over the weekend of bacon.
Are you
home.
Serious?
Yeah.
Larry, that's a big old congrats, right? How many bird dogs got it done for you?
Well, it started off with two, then one lady got her whole family involved, and I just gave out zip code to the whole family, and they all went out, and between them, probably over 100. So then another lady just did it by herself, and she's a go-getter too, so she'd get me 45 one day and 50 the next day. So
You had – how many leads did you have on Friday?
On Friday, I probably had – maybe only 30, 40. That's it. Total.
And how many? And how do you have? How many did you have Sunday afternoon?
I'm close to 300 now.
I love it.
So,
I love it.
But they're all going to the VA already to get the address and everything written down. Now the skip tracer. Did they find the homeowner's name, or do I have to provide them from the assessor site?
It's in FreedomSoft. So. What happens when – here's how this process works. When your bird dog sends in a lead, they email in a photo and the address,
uh-huh.
creates the lead record in the campaign, and then the address goes down into the notes box, okay? That's where the content of the email is going to be placed. It'll say subject line, whatever the address, 123 Main Street. Your skip tracer needs to grab that address, copy it, take it up to the very top of the lead, and in the gray section, it'll say click to edit address. And you click that and paste it up there. And once you save the address up top now, that's the property address,
uh-huh.
right top of the details page, then your skip tracer will click the blue find owner button. And when they do that, FreedomSoft is tied into public records. And so they'll click find owner. It'll pull up the public records data. Most of the time, there's only one address there. Sometimes there are multiple, so they'll select the correct one and tell it to save, and then it'll automatically populate the owner of record and the mailing address, and that's what they're going to skip trace. Owner of record's name and the mailing address, not the property address. You have to be really, really clear.
Mailing
you do
address.
Not want them to put in the person's name and use the vacant house address. You'll get bad data.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yep. Perfect sense.
Okay.
Even the one girl that...
Here's the thing. That FreedomSoft data, we get that updated monthly, so it comes right out of public records. In the event, it's pretty rare, but in the event they click find owner and nothing comes up, then they can go to the county website and see if there's any information there. But most of the time, FreedomSoft will have it. It's right there.
Okay, perfect. All right.
Yep.
Now, if some of them couldn't get the like their phone to send to it from the home snap because they had Android, so I have it in my email, and then how do I transfer like my email home snap into the FreedomSoft? Then I guess
you're going to have to forward those emails to the unique email address tied to that campaign, whichever campaign you want them in.
Okay.
That's how you'll have to do it. So here's the thing. HomeSnap and Android are goofy for some reason. So if you want to take HomeSnap out of the equation with your bird dogs, just tell them snap a photo of the house. And then email that photo to the unique email address that you give them tied to the campaign and put the address in the subject line and hit send. Don't even use HomeSnap. They can use HomeSnap if they're standing in front of a house that's missing the house numbers, and it'll help them identify the address. But other than that, so that way, because you don't want this extra step where you have to forward from your personal inbox into FreedomSoft. So just get HomeSnap out of it, tell them to email the photo right to the campaign, type the address in the subject line, hit send, that's it.
Okay. Yeah, even got pulled over twice because of being a suspicious person driving through neighborhood slowly.
Nice. They didn't get in trouble at all, did they?
No, but she said they had to do some explaining because the cops didn't understand what she was doing.
Right.
So, but yeah, everything went good this week. So,
cool.
Good. Finally.
That is a that's killer that you went from a handful of leads to that many in a weekend, right? Because it really is just a matter of finding 1 to 3 people that are motivated. And, you know, sometimes you'll find them right away in a market, and sometimes you have to go through 20. Sometimes, right? We've had people that have had to go through more than that. But once you find them, it can, you know, it can change in 48 hours, which is what you experience. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Are you going to be on the phone, or are you going to get a salesperson on the phone?
I'm going to get a salesperson.
Coming in.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
not.
So
I'm
you
not.
Need – you need. Have you hired a skip tracer yet?
I have one that is that I'm going to be using, yes. But okay. I'm waiting for my VA to get all the data for me, and then it's going to go straight to them, and they have LexisNexis.
Perfect.
So
you want to give them access to your FreedomSoft account. You'll give them permissions to those campaigns, and then you want to make sure that your lead flow is tied to it so that when after they do the skip trace and save the phone numbers, you can have them update the status to skip trace complete, call seller. And then when your salesperson, who will also have access to your FreedomSoft account and those campaigns, they just have to look for that status, and they know that the phone numbers are there ready to call. And I can I can help you through getting some of that set up if you need to. So let me know. We can get it all in place really quick. We'll just have to do it on the computer, not on the call here.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, sir. So you need a skip tracer that's that has some time they can devote to your leads, and you've got to start talking to salespeople.
Okay. Yeah, I got to put my online to find a salesperson. So that's my next thing.
Yep. Indeed, and Craigslist. Have you made sales calls before?
I've talked to people. I'm not good at it because I'm a pushover. So.
As long as you can train it.
Yeah.
I mean, the script is pretty simple, but yeah, you can be fully open with a salesperson. And say, hey, I'm not wired for this. I know how to generate the leads. I've got them ready. I need a salesperson on the phone. So, yep.
Okay.
Get those ads posted and then take them to a DISC test. The free version, if somebody, you know, if they answer honestly, assuming they do, the free version is good. Or you can pay for a full version for $29 and send them the link. But you want ideal high D personality on a DISC test. High I's can sell as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, get that ad posted, and we'll help you. I know you've already heard a lot of conversation about salespeople, so once you get in the middle of it, if you have any questions, obviously we'll help.
Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Thanks, Mike.
Good stuff. Yeah, great update. I love it. That's one of those mini wins on the way. If you're just checking in, Larry, on we talk about this all the time with bird dogs can be a little bit frustrating, but stay with it. Keep your ad posted. Keep talking to people. He just said on Friday he had 30 leads from bird dogs, which is a start. The goal is 250 by Sunday night. So 48 hours later, he's just under 300. He found two people that were hungry and said, you know, we'll go drive this weekend. And they went and knocked it out of the park for him. So stay with it. You're just checking in. So, yeah, Larry, good update. Who else is with us?
Thank you.
Janie and Larry Potts.
Hi, Janie and Larry. How are you?
Hey. Good.
Good.
Good. Let's talk market. I want you to play ball with some more people.
Okay.
Even though there's a golf course in Augusta, Georgia that makes me partial to that market, you've got to find a bigger place to play ball. Now, could that be a subsequent market? What's that?
Can I get lucky on that? Augusta is really about 3 markets. You have East Augusta, West, and South Carolina.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. Let me explain my logic on picking Augusta. Tell me I'm wrong. Augusta, Richmond County, one place. Right across the river, connected by 3 bridges, is East Augusta in South Carolina, which is a total different animal, but it's still part of the city. And
what's total population?
I'll have to look through it because north of Augusta, three cities have grown for 25 miles and just boom in that direction. So when you look at the population, any 500,000K, but I don't quite understand that. Is that the population dollar or the target population?
You're still kind of breaking up a little bit, but I heard you say 500,000. I want you to be, for your first market, I want 500,000 even on the low side. I can live with it if all the other numbers look good. If the P ratio is strong, we have activity there. Again, this is a numbers game to some extent, right? Where can we go and have the best chance of getting you involved in a deal right away? And obviously population, right, plays ball. You go to Houston, there are just more deals going on because of the number of people there than Denver, right? Houston's many, many times bigger than Denver. So that's
understand. I've been a sales for 4 years, owned a dozen companies. I understand that, and I'm just trying to set the criteria. Are Rust Belt cities, large Rust Belt cities, are they good cities to go to or not?
We're going to stick to the data. If you have activity, if you have population and activity, so I went to ListSource this afternoon after Janie's email came in, and I ran Augusta, Georgia, and there were three in the last 12 months. They were basically averaging 30 transactions a month.
Okay.
30 absentee owner transactions a month. Can you get involved there and make money? Absolutely. Is it easier if you go to a place where there are a couple hundred absentee owner transactions a month? And obviously the answer is yes. So what's still up in the air is, I don't mind Augusta, Georgia. What I want to see is it your first sort of anchor market, or is it a subsequent market? And if you're telling me that you can get the surrounding areas to a half a million people plus, and we can see a solid P ratio, and we can see some activity on listsource.com, it can work.
Okay.
But I want to set you up for success out of the gate, and population is one of the key factors. I mean, there's just, right, it just makes sense. There's more activity where more people live. So and you were kind of breaking up there when you were talking about some of the surrounding areas. It seems like I can hear you pretty good now, but you were saying something that in the area there's over a half million people.
I don't know if it stretches that. The metro area of Augusta used to be the fourth biggest in Georgia.
Okay.
But when you cross the river, there's a whole city, East Augusta, which is in South Carolina, but doesn't show up on that data. And then the county right above it, which you can't tell. It's kind of like going from L.A. to San Diego. Hell, you can't tell what you're in because it never ends.
Okay.
So let us do our homework.
If you can piece together, because I looked up the Augusta MSA. So I looked up the Augusta population, and it was 190-some thousand. Then I typed in MSA, and it only went to 201 or 202. But you're talking about East Augusta in a different state. So if you can piece all that together, and it's all right in there, let me know what that area looks like, and I'll give you feedback on let's go here first or let's pick somewhere bigger and let's go there second.
Okay, that's fair there.
I did up the population there is about 21,000.
Population where?
Of North Augusta. It's North Augusta, not East Augusta.
Okay.
That's
North,
in South.
So, so we're all with the MSA plus that, we're only at 220.
Yeah.
At a minimum, we're only half the size I'd like to see at.
If we go to the county above it, you know, my guess is it's not probably over 100,000 more, so we're probably going to be on the low 300,000 population.
And it's probably really spread out too, I would guess.
Right.
Yep.
A lot of the suburbs going into there. Okay.
Yep. I'd like to see a bigger market.
At
a minimum, 500,000 to 700,000.
Because I looked at Macon, Georgia, and you know, again, that population, it used to be the number three population in Georgia. Of course, half the population in Georgia lives in the Atlanta area. So
in Atlanta, right? What's number two?
It's either Columbus or Savannah.
Okay. What are check population on those?
Okay. We'll look at those. We'll look at Charleston, South Carolina, or
yep.
My wife, Ohio, she's looking at Columbus, so.
Yep.
Indianapolis, 860,000.
and in the Indianapolis area, they're doing a lot of regentrification in the inner cities there. So I'm betting people are flipping houses and buying stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, India. Yeah, I'd like to see a P ratio, but here's the thing, everybody. We want to use P ratio, but it's not the end all be all. I mean, you go into a market that's that big, like Indiana, there are transactions. Can you find a way to get in the middle of them? Absolutely. Right. What we're doing with all this data is saying, hey, we want to come out of the gate, play the percentages. Right. I was just in Vegas at a real estate event last weekend. The odds there aren't very good. But what we want to do is put the odds in our favor that says, hey, if we go into this market, what are the chances I can get in the middle of deals in a very short amount of time? And so we want good odds. Obviously, population is one of them. Right. And then you want to look at the P ratio. Is it really competitive like Denver, or is the market oversaturated? That's what that number gives you a clue into. Right. How many deals per capita, basically. It's not it's an art still. It's not an exact science. So this is why you do your data and go through the process. And a place like, back to my point is, even if the P ratio was off in a place like Indianapolis, could you go there and get involved in transactions? Sure. You can come to Denver and get in the middle of deals. You're just going to have to spend a ton of money and work your tail off to find them. But, wholesalers are making money in Denver. It's just really challenging to get deals. So it's not that it can't be done. We just want to go where it's easier. That's the whole point of this market analysis. So, okay. Yeah, I would think Indy would be – a no-brainer, although I don't have the number off the top of my head. But, yeah, see what else you can come up with there. If you want to stay in Georgia, I'm okay with it. Let's just let's find a place for your first market. Let's find a place that we think will be easier to go in and get in the middle of deals than another market. So, like I said, I'm not opposed to Augusta or wherever as a secondary. There, right? If you've got some deals moving in a bigger market and you want to launch some smaller ones and see if you can get one or two deals a month in them moving forward, I'm all for it. Right? Because you know how to go in and generate good leads. You can go into some of those smaller markets and become one of the top players in a relatively short amount of time. You can do that in bigger markets too, but you can, right? It's easier to do in a smaller. So let's just make a good decision on your first market.
Okay, looked at the population of Indianapolis, 855,000. I think that'll work.
Right, The MSA will be big, so there'll be a lot of activity there. Yeah, so run P ratio on that, and then we've got an email string going back and forth in the coaching email. Yeah. Throw those on the spreadsheet and then fire it over.
Okay.
Let's see if
we
can't get
this.
I'm
pretty sure I ran that MSA and it didn't come back very good. It definitely wasn't in my top 10.
Yeah.
For Indianapolis.
Yeah, I definitely ran that city thinking it was going to be, hot.
How did the city look and then not the MSA? Because the city has enough people at 800,000 plus to stand on its own, or you don't have to run the MSA.
No, the population was fine. It was the MSA that was – I think it was just hyper supply. It was – I don't think it was in the sweet spot for sure.
Yeah, so Janie, run it and see what it says. Let's take a look.
Okay. Hey, I have a quick question.
Sure.
A little off from that. When we're building our buyers list on ListSource, we're supposed to add on like bathrooms, bedrooms, square footage, blah, blah, blah. On the Junior One marketing amount, what is that?
Junior One is a second mortgage. So just grab Junior One loan amount.
Okay.
That's going to tell you that's a junior lien. That'll tell you if there's one present, and there's also a first mortgage that they bought it with two loans for financing.
Oh, okay. I just never heard Junior One marketing. I didn't know what
that
was.
Yeah, that's just a junior lien is subsequent to the primary or the first position lien. Here's the thing on that one, Janie. You can pick or choose. I mean, it's not going to make a big difference on the price. You can go without that one. We like to know it. It's not going to make or break your list by any stretch. So,
yeah,
but that's what that is. Okay. That's what that is. Second mortgage amount.
Second.
Yep. You're breaking up again.
Never mind. Not important.
Okay. Yeah, Janie, we can hear you really clear for whatever reason.
Okay. She keeps me across the room behind chained doors. So, you know,
yeah, I was wondering. Yeah.
I have to. No, what
don't
I was saying about.
That phone to call motivated sellers.
Yeah. Okay. I'll get over there and do that. That's my part.
Sounds good. Yep. Yeah, let me know what you find. Let's see if we can get your market pick tomorrow.
Okay.
Beautiful. Who else? You guys always make me ask twice on a Monday for who has questions. So, quiet group.
Okay. Yeah. My question
all
comes in.
Yeah.
Hunting for a bird dog, and you give them a zip code. I know there's a lot of cities. You know, I could get a lot of pictures taken in Gary, Indiana. But as far as somebody wanting to buy those houses, that's a different story. So, is there any? I don't know how to dance around the question. How do you differentiate it? Every other house that's boarded up, is that a good place to look, or do you just
only if you have absentee owner activity there? So that's why you go to List Source and grab that list that Janie was just asking me about, and then you map it, and that's going to tell you where to send your bird dogs. So yeah, you can absolutely find boarded up houses in places where nobody's buying, for sure.
Yeah.
Which is why, yeah, right. Well, and here's the thing: there are pockets of Detroit where investors are buying.
Yeah,
I was just talking to a guy. I think it was on the plane ride. I don't remember. He had some ties to Detroit, so there are pockets in Detroit where there is zero investor activity, and then there are pockets where people are buying, and that's most cities. Denver is kind of an anomaly where there's investor activity just about everywhere. Right, there really isn't a boarded up war zone. I mean, you can. Right, you talk to investors in Denver, where do you buy? And they'll say anywhere. You go to Pittsburgh, where do you buy? You will not get that same answer. They'll say, I buy these five zip codes. Or I buy these, I don't even touch these, won't even look at it. So it just depends on your market. But yeah, that's why you grab the absentee data from List Source, and then we map it, because that's going to tell you where to go. Is it, does the city look like a shotgun shell hit it and there's activity everywhere? Some cities will look like that. Other cities, there will be very distinct pockets where the investors are buying. That's where we go generate leads. Make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. I understand that. My son lives in Tampa. He can see downtown. He's in a regentrified neighborhood.
Yep.
They're buying everything around them because it was a
Tampa.
Section. It made the transition from owners to Section 8, and now it's a prime neighborhood. And
yep.
So,
Tampa has legitimate war zone, though. Rob's bought in over 20 states, and he said there's only two times he's been scared, and I can't remember what two cities he tells me, but Tampa's one of them.
Well. Where my son's at, his mother and others were very apprehensive of him buying in the middle of that area. But it's regentrified.
You said it's being turned around, though.
Oh, yes, yeah, turned around. They're buying the houses, pushing them down, putting up houses. And, he was the first one in there. Then there's, some other young yuppie couple bought next door. And so you see the activities that everything will be pushed out within a year and a half, 2 years.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. When they identify those markets, I mean, clearly the investors are there, and those are great places to go generate leads. The demand is there.
Yeah.
You have boots on the ground there too, if you have family. So, hey, that's one of the things that you all can consider. I mean, if you have family or friends in a market that you can either, maybe be a property runner, maybe generate some leads, maybe, do whatever that would help out. Or you can go vacation in a place like that and go visit your market, and kill a couple birds with the same stone and drop it on family or friends. You can make that a part of the equation too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, what Rob has always taught is live where you want, buy and sell where it makes sense. If you just like a place for whatever reason, and you want to run some numbers there and say, hey, we're gonna be here anyway. Let's go buy and sell there. That's fine.
Okay. We'll look
a lot
at
of
Tampa.
Times. Yeah, where? A lot of times I just emailed this to somebody last week, but they were down to two markets and they said, do you have a preference? And I emailed back and said, do you know anybody in either? Or do you have any ties? Do you like one more than the other? Mm-hmm. If the numbers work in both, you can consider that too. So,
okay.
Yeah, run Tampa and see what it looks like.
Yeah, my son's got – he runs a marketing company. So he does marketing for other things. So I can use him.
Yeah. Yeah, that can give you – I mean, it's not like you need somebody on the ground, right? I mean, you can – what we teach is you can put your whole team together and not know a soul. But if you know somebody there, sometimes it can add a little advantage here and there. So.
Okay.
Yeah, see what Tampa looks like. What else?
Mike, Tom here.
Hey, Tom.
If I sound like Barry White, because I've been sick. Oh, baby, I want your love, baby.
Nice. A little channeling your inner Barry White.
Yeah. Yeah, so it went from flooded basement to sick as a dog.
Yeah. No fun.
My sales guy had one person who said she's not interested, but she's interested in getting an offer.
Okay. Imagine that.
I haven't called her. I haven't gotten in touch with her.
Okay.
I haven't been able to get in touch with her yet. But what I'm going to do is, you know, run the numbers and figure out what I'm going to offer. And then just send her a contract. Now, how would you suggest, what's the best way of sending a contract? A lot of people get tripped up on this, you know, hello sign and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I like that first. If you get the impression that the seller has an email, knows what to do with it, hello sign. Nothing beats it. You know, you're going to talk to people eventually who are going to say, what's email? In which case you have to go a different route. But, hey, Tom, when you get on the phone with this person, say, you know, why are you looking to sell? You're kind of going through the script, getting to know them a little bit. If they don't sound that interested, say, I'll be honest, you know, we typically buy from people who are really motivated to sell, and I'm just not getting that impression from you. Is that accurate? And then be quiet and then see what they say. And then you can come right out of the gate and tell them, you just don't sound that motivated to me. That's what I'm reading. Is that accurate? It's a really soft way, like in a, to say, you know, to ask if they're motivated or not. And then what you're doing is the question is about asking them if you're reading the scenario correctly. So, and see what they say. You have to ask the question though, and just be quiet and see what their reply comes back at. Because now you're basically taking it away, saying, I could make you an offer, but I'm just not getting the impression that you're that motivated. And, you know, we always buy from people who are really motivated. We help solve their problem. I'm just not getting the feeling that you're very motivated. Am I reading the situation properly or correctly? See what they tell you. They will either say, yeah, you know, it's really not a big deal, in which case, they're not motivated. So, I think you can still send over an offer, but just expect to move on. Or they'll chime in and say, no, you know, this is, I would like to get it out of my hands. And it'll change the conversation with them. So, but yeah, not, you know, clearly not everybody's going to be motivated. A lot of them will be, but not all. When are you calling them back?
I was going to call them as soon as this call's over.
Okay, perfect. Yep, see how it goes.
Yeah.
All you can do is ask, find out. Then you'll get people that'll – I had one of these the other day. I'll sell. Give me 150 grand for it. I mean, really, you know, comps in the neighborhood are like mid-60s. And they're just being a – he's just being a wise guy, right?
Right.
Wasting time. Yeah, I'm interested in selling. Give me 150,000. Okay. Right. Most people are going to be fine, but you'll get some clowns in there. That's part of it.
Yeah.
Let the clowns be clowns. That's just what they do.
Well, my my sales guy says, he's pretty funny. He goes, yeah, pop my cherry. Just like you said, the guy told me to F off.
Nice.
I said, yeah. He goes, well, at least I got that over with, so I don't have to worry.
Yeah, you know what? Grumpy people are grumpy, and that's just how they roll. And there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. Yeah.
That's what I told him. I said, you know, you're going to get people, you know, this spectrum of people. So, but that's all he's come up with so far, and I haven't talked to him, so I don't know how many hours he's actually been doing it. So.
Yeah, you want to know when your salespeople go on and make calls, have them shoot you a text afterwards that said, this is how long I was on the phone for, number of dials, this is how many people I talked to, bad numbers. You've got to have those stats and just have them text them over after every shift. Do the same with your VAs. How many hours did you work? How many leads did you skip trace? You know, how many successful numbers or, you know, how many did you get data on? Cause you want to keep track of all that stuff and you want to know, I mean, if you've got leads that need to be skip traced and you've got a VA that's giving you 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there, that's not going to cut it. So now you can go back with a question that says, hey, I need more, you know, I need more than 30 minutes from you every 3 days. Is that something you can do? Yes or no. So that you can either, you know, make an intelligent decision about personnel. But your salespeople have got to be checking in. You need to know what's going on. If they're using a FreedomSoft number, you can look. It'll tell you how many calls they made per day. But if you're not, then you need them to shoot you a text after every shift. And that way you know exactly what they're doing. Yep.
All right.
Anything else, Tom?
No, that's it.
Call that seller, whether you get a hold of them today or tomorrow. Tell me how that conversation goes.
Okay, I will.
And if they don't sound interested, drop that line. You know, we typically buy from people who are really motivated to sell. I'm just not hearing much motivation for you to get rid of this property. Am I reading the situation properly? And see what they say.
Okay, I'll do that.
Like I said, either they'll verify that they're not motivated, or they'll chime in and say, no, I need this property gone. So,
all right.
Okay. Yeah, shoot me an email after you talk to them. Let me know how it goes.
All right, well.
Cool. And eat some honey. Keep your voice. I've heard that helps. Or put honey in tea or something like that.
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, I get the same thing. I get a cold, my voice starts to go away. It's no fun.
I could always, you know, be the announcer for new movies. In a world.
Yeah, that's right. You can only do it twice a year, though, when you have a cold, so that's not a...
It always starts with, in a world.
Yeah, it does. Who else?
Thanks, Quinn.
Hey there.
How are you, bud?
Good, how are you?
Great. Moving right along. Oh,
a good word.
Trying to keep it moving. So, you know, it's like we talked about before that just with our keeping our sales guys going and getting staff,
yep.
You know, keeping them involved in the process. It's like, everybody's got lives, and of course, not having some people that can do it full time yet. You know what I'm saying? That's their full time source of income. Is you know, just normal challenge. We got to have some guys
yep.
that can do it part time, and you know, until they can work themselves into it.
Right.
Because you know the actor, he's moving from New York to LA now. He's got a gig out there. So.
Yep. Saw that one coming, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Knew it when we flew him from New York to Florida a few months ago, or last month or whatever it was.
Right.
But it is what it is, and
yep.
but I know, you know, consistency is key. We've got to keep, you know, we got to keep whatever momentum we have. We have to keep it going. If it's,
yep.
you know, if it's getting 10 new leads a week or, you know, whatever the machine will handle, but we can't stop, you know, stop getting leads because we got too many. Can't stop making calls, you know, because we don't have enough. Can't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. So,
you know, growth for any small business, growth is the hardest thing on the table. You're right alongside personnel. This is just, right, and you know that. This is business ownership stuff. But, yeah, this is a challenge. So, you're going to go through seasons where people are coming and going, and you're going to go through others where everybody just sits still for a little bit. So, that's why when you find somebody good, and they can be challenging to find. You know, never said that you'll make three calls and have a rock star, but it's worth looking because when you put the two together, right, when you build the scenario that Rob and Brad have working, it's consistent. So, keep pushing on it until you find it. Until, right?
Yeah,
until is always
the
magic word.
And
You
know, it's easier for, you know, of course, I want to revert back to what I do and what I know works. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't sustain growth. It sustains me having a very well-paying job.
Right. That's it. You know, job or business.
You know,
nobody comes here for job. So
I know how to flip, you know, $5,000-$6,000 a year, make $120,000. That's not a problem.
Yep.
But doing anything bigger than that.
Right. And then the second you stop, your income shuts off because you are the system.
Oh, yeah.
So, zero leverage is a lot easier than leverage, no doubt. Yep. Yeah, stay on it. You know, I know you will, but you're gonna wear some different hats. So if you don't have anybody on the phone, you and Josh gotta be on the phone. Keep this train running. But you know, then people come into momentum too, and they can, you know, they can hear it.
Right.
You know, if you don't have a salesperson, but you guys are still on the phone figuring it out, and you've got deals working, and somebody says, "What am I gonna be doing?" You're gonna say, "You're gonna be doing this," and you know, we have six deals on the table right now. And the situation sells itself. So.
Right, right. Well, that's been, I guess, part of the thing, too, is that, you know, we got, like, putting in place things like the closing coordinator to do deals, even though we know we can do it, has been an issue. You know what I mean? So we're closing the deals, and I'm like, we're cutting our closing coordinator's throat, so they can't come on, you know, any sooner, faster, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, we're
you have somebody in that seat?
Well, my mom can do it. She's ready.
Okay. Okay.
You know, she's not doing, like I said, she can close 10 to 15 deals, you know, a month. You know, she's done it in the past for me.
And she knows the game. With any closing coordinator, whether it's your mom or somebody else, obviously.
Yeah.
Typically, hire somebody on contract. Pay them at closing, and somebody that knows what they're doing. You don't want to come in and train that position. That's too much. It's easy to train a bird dog. Pretty easy to train a salesperson on some scripting because salespeople are good at phone sales anyway. But to come in and teach somebody title, and don't mess around with that.
Yeah. What document next or all that. So I just put her on. I've got, you know, three of my personal deals that I've had for. Stuff that's not outside of what we're doing with you guys, but you know, just like, I don't have time for it. I need to get her trained up to close my deal again.
So. Yeah, if she's a good fit, roll with it. If not, find a contract closer or transaction coordinator on online.
Yep.
You can post an ad for that, obviously, in Craigslist, just like anybody else, but it's pretty common for a transaction coordinator to just work off get paid per file. So, that'll be that opposite of your salespeople on a disc test. That'll be the most often the super organized person that's wired like an accountant. Yeah, keep solve that sales piece. You find consistency there, and you guys have the leads.
I think, like I said, it's just that pulling back and not really pulling back, but we keep pulling back.
We don't want to pull back. It's like once we get – I don't want to. I want to keep – you know, when we got momentum, I want to keep pushing.
Right.
You know, and just fill in the voids and get people working that. So, just a matter of time.
Yes, sir. You'll find it. Right person's out there. Yep.
Yep.
You've got a couple hundred million to choose from here in the U.S., so.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, you'll find them. What else? Anything?
Like I said, we got the one market up and going. It's, you know, I know I got to have people answer phones or make phone calls before, you know, if we're not going to do it. And I can do it, but having taken the time to sit down and do it is the problem.
You got really quiet all of a sudden, Quinn.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Is that better now?
Yeah, sorry. Way better. Thanks.
In my truck, if the AC blows across my mic, it cuts off. I was saying that, you know, definitely fixing that salesperson's job is the issue. So get that going.
Get that going.
Add another market.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I was just going to say solve that piece and then launch a second one. Start getting leads there while they're working through leads in market one. Even if you have, don't get rid of your part-timers, but if you have a part-timer and a full-timer or two part-timers and a full-timer, that can work. They can work together.
Yeah.
But when you get, you know, consistent effort, talk about it all the time, consistent effort calling these leads, and you'll find yourself in the middle of contracts.
Gotcha.
That's how it works. Yep. And then I was cracking up. You're talking about AC. You must be in Florida because 34 degrees here in D-Town.
Yeah. It's 59 here.
That's warm. We have AC. Just roll your window down.
Yeah. It was 39 this morning when we woke up. So.
Hey, that's pretty chilly for Florida.
It's 59 at 7 o'clock at night. So.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a jacket. That's the only reason I got AC on.
get your winter coats out.
That's it.
I like it. Yesterday we did a family photo. Mid-70s. Photographers in a tank top. And then you wake up this morning, it's 30 degrees.
Right.
There we go. Wow. Crazy. Anyway.
That is crazy.
Yeah, good stuff. Get that, I know you've burned through gone through a couple salespeople. Keep the ads out there.
Hey, Mike, this is Darren.
What's up, Darren?
Yo. Told you I'd be back.
Word. Yeah, you did.
Oh, we got a bunch of stuff going on. Sawyer's been just cranking over here.
Good.
He's got another 4 deals, I believe, under contract since we got back from Vegas.
Yep.
We are kind of lost a little momentum, though, on the disposition side. Mark has kind of not been successful and just kind of drifting off into nowhere.
Yeah.
So we're going to – Sawyer's kind of picking up the – pieces for us right now while we're looking for another guy.
Yeah, let so, Sawyer work both ends.
Yeah, he's gonna. And
cool.
So he's been coming in every day at 9, and I've been working with him and helping him
yep.
Get the bird dogs going in other locations. And
yep.
So we posted some Craigslist ads this morning for Cleveland and Just need to get back on the ball and hire another guy here in round 2 here for dispositions and see if we can find somebody that's going to be more do a better job.
Yeah, I was going to say, let Sawyer do that position for a little bit on a couple deals and then have him go find him and say, hey man, bring this person in, leverage your time, manage them, teach them what to do. Here's how we'll pay them. I'll give you a bump on it for overseeing it. And you can just oversee that position. So, I mean, you guys have plenty going on, and that doesn't seem like it's going to slow down anytime soon. So get him over to do that. So Chris, for Rob and Brad, helps, right? He brought another salesperson on or two. Now they did hire somebody who's local. He's in the office now. But they can still go to Chris for questions and what they need, because he's been here for a while. So another leverage piece. Because if you teach it to Sawyer and he knows it, you can post the ad and then let him talk to people. He's going to be working with them.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just work it and just keep hiring people. And he's also picked up on he's going to be taking all the calls for hiring a new bird dog here in Cleveland. So I helped him post the ad this morning, but all the calls are going to go right to him. So
perfect. Yep.
So he's going to be able to – I found that when I post the ad for a bird dog, you get a ton of responses. Nobody ever leaves your phone number. So then you have to – instead of sitting down and just making calls to hire people, you have to then sit down and write a whole series of emails out to everybody like, hey – that's great that you're interested. How do I get a hold of you? And so then you have to wait another day or two before they send the information back. So tell them
in the ad, if this is interesting, reply back with your phone number, because we're ready to hire somebody now.
Right.
And how this is going to work is we're going to have a quick 5-minute conversation. And if you're interested, you'll start making money. So tell them to give you their phone number. Just if they're not there, request it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fire back a phone number, say we're going to go right to a 5-minute phone call. And if this is a fit, fantastic. We'll have you making money in the next 48 hours.
Today
or in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Right.
Yep.
So I'm just excited because he's going to be able to push that.
Yeah, nice.
And then,
tell people what you want them to do, politely.
Okay.
Tell them what you want and need them to do.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah, we learned our lesson the first time, so we're tweaking that. That's exactly what we did. And then the other thing that we learned was if I call people or send them the instructions and just say, hey, go out and send me a couple leads and, you know, make sure that it's working right before we get you going and making money and whatever, maybe 1 out of 10 people will actually do it.
Yep.
Maybe. So I think with Sawyer being able to follow up with these people and baby them a little bit more until they get up and running and making money,
I think you have to go to a phone call. And then
I don't think you were on.
I got to tell you this. I don't think you were on last Thursday, but I don't remember who it was. But they basically said they're talking to a new bird dog, and they said, I'm going to show you I'm serious. Snap any photo, right? Snap a photo of the floor you're standing on. Email it over into the campaign, and then what's your email tied to your PayPal? I'm going to pay you for it right now, show you that I'm serious. So, they're like, walk outside and take a photo of a tree, send it in, bam, here comes the money.
We'll pay you $3. Yeah, like
I'm dead serious. Right. So that's how this is going to work. You're going to send me a photo. I'm going to send you money. So I really like that.
Okay.
And they just – I think he told them, he said, go snap a photo of your neighbor's house, send it in, and I'll pay you right now.
Perfect. I like it. I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you really need to go to – you need to post the ad, somebody replies for a bird dog, and you need to go to phone conversation. They need to hear it in your voice that you're dead serious. Email won't cut it.
No. It was phone conversation, then send them the instructions in email. And
gotcha.
Send us 2 leads. And I feel like if I didn't follow up with them 2 or 3 times after that, then it was like the whole thing was a waste. Like they would never, I could never convert them into a doer unless I was on them. And obviously with my schedule, it was maybe once a week I might call you and make sure you're doing what you're supposed to. And
So yeah, you got to get Sawyer on that and just authorize him to tell people, here's how this is going to work. You know, if they're in a neighborhood, great. Tell them to go snap a photo of your neighbor's house, send it over. If they're not, it doesn't matter. It's not a lead anyway. Tell them to, you know, take a picture of the wall nearest you, send it in. I want to show that I'm serious.
I like that. So, I like it.
Yep.
Trying to think of what else is going on.
So you have four right now that you have four right now that Sawyer can be moving. You have
He's working on it.
You have contracts in hand?
Oh yeah, contracts in hand.
Okay.
One of them's verbal that he just got. It's been sent out. The contract.
Okay.
We're waiting for it to get signed. But
okay.
We actually bought two that a builder might be interested in. It's in a pretty it's an area where everything's kind of being torn down and new construction's being built.
Yep.
So we might be able to sell those for about $30,000 a lot.
Hey, get bandit signs out. If you have builders driving that neighborhood, you got to get bandit signs in that neighborhood. That's a contract for sale in this neighborhood. Two of them.
Call this number. Okay.
And then either give them put Sawyer's number on there, or better yet, keep his number off the sign, but set up a FreedomSoft campaign, tie a FreedomSoft number to it, and then put that number on the sign. And then tell Sawyer, hey, when these things come in, keep an eye on this. These are going to be buyers in this neighborhood.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, reverse bandit signs is a killer way to sell deals. Just remember to advertise what you actually have for sale, which at this point is not a house or a property.
Contract for sale.
Two contracts for sale in this neighborhood. And then you said there's builder activity. They're going to be in and out all the time.
Yeah, I wonder if we should just put it right in the yard where the house is.
Yeah, if the owner's good with it, contract for sale on this house. But you're going to get more traction at a busy intersection, as with all bandit signs. But you can, for sure. I mean, if there's activity on the street and you think people are coming by, yeah, you just never know. The other thing, too, is he can get on the phone and start calling builders. Hey, a lot of builder activity that's going on in this neighborhood. We have we have contracts on two properties for sale. Are you guys, doing additions or scrapes over here for your clients?
Yeah.
So yeah, that happens all over the place.
That's a good idea. All right, I'll have them do all that. Bandit signs, call the builders, and we'll see if we can get something converted here in the next couple days, this week.
Yeah, for sure. Nice.
I want to call you on Thursday and tell you got something under contract.
I'm expecting it.
All right. That's all I got.
Make it happen. You've got
all right, buddy.
Four deals tied up here, it sounds like, in good spots. So.
Yep.
And then you get in
all
with
right.
one or two builders like that who are looking. The bigger builders in town have money. They'll call, especially
right.
when we're talking about $30,000 houses here all day long.
Yeah, they're building $300,000-$400,000 houses. So it's pretty much like the same model we've got going on here.
Hey, tell
I wish
tell your bird dogs, watch this. Tell your bird dogs when you're out and about, go to anytime they see a roll-off, a dumpster in front of a house, say, pay them more for these. Say, I'll give you what $5 or $6 for these. Pull up to the house where the construction's going on. Because dumpster 9.9 out of 10 times equals investor owned. People do order them from time to time, but not usually. They'll order those bags that you can fill up and they come haul off. But dumpster almost always means investor renovation, almost always. So tell them, you see a dumpster while you're driving around looking for vacants, pull over, walk inside. There will be nail guns popping. Ask if the owner's on site, and nobody's going to be there. Or if they're not, if they are, you can talk to them, get their contact info. If they're not, ask one of the subs on site, who's running this project that I can talk to.
Right.
We have more deals for sale. I want to get a hold of the owner. How do I reach him? So we and then pay them for those, because those will be buyer leads. And you already know they have a project going in the neighborhoods where your bird dogs are at, because that's where they're driving anyway.
Cool. I'm just writing here.
We had a gal. She was a realtor. And I was flipping a house a block over from where she lived. And I get a phone call from one day from my GC. And he said, hey, an agent just stopped by and wanted your number. So I gave it to her. And Amber ends up calling me and said, hey, I'm a real estate agent. You're doing a flip a block away from where I live. Are you looking for other projects? And I said, yeah. And she goes, what are you looking for? And I told her. And she said, all right, let me see what I can find. And I didn't, I was like, whatever. I won't hear back from her. she found, I don't know, found us 5 or 6 deals over the next 2 years and got paid. And she just walked over, walked inside and said, who owns this place? Can I get their number? So that works all day long. And just have your bird dogs do it because they're out and about. Anyway.
I like it. So the bird dog asked for the owner's phone number.
Yeah, they can just walk in and say, hey, is the owner of the property here? And they just give them a quick little script that says, I work with a group that sells deals, and, you know, what's the owner's number? I'd like to get in touch with them and see if they're still buying in the area. We have great deals in this neighborhood for sale. So just give them a quick little script on what to say.
Cool. I like it.
Yeah, this will be good because Sawyer, I know you guys told me he's a rock star, so keep him on. Get a couple to the closing table, and his motivation is going to go up from where it is even now. And he's effective on the phone. So, I mean, you come back for a week, and he's got three signed contracts and one more pending on a verbal acceptance.
Right.
Yeah, keep him on board. And I know that's what you've been doing, so that's good.
Cool. Thanks for all the tips. Good tips. So we'll get them implemented and let you know how it goes next week.
I'm full of tips, Darren. Full of tips.
What's that?
I'm full of tips. Hey, man, I'm telling you, that's why you got to be on the calls.
Yeah.
Because you can't write all this stuff down.
I wrote it down. Don't you worry.
Well, I'm just saying, but it comes out in situational scenarios.
Yeah.
I mean, to put everything down on paper in a program, everybody's head would spin. So you take it off piece by piece, and then you jump on the calls like this, and we talk through real-world scenarios, and
right.
Here's how you get it moved. So anyway,
all these nuggets
what were you
going to
say?
Out. All these nuggets come out.
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna tell you on a different subject. I was going to tell you I was a big winner in Vegas. I came home with 55 big dollars in my pocket.
Blackjack or slot machines? What's your flavor?
Blackjack. Blackjack. I played for hours.
For 55 bucks, huh?
Oh, yeah. I walked out of there a winner, though. Put it in my pocket.
Yeah,
I was whistling. Whistling out of there.
Take that. Send a find the Palms owner on Twitter and send him a tweet.
Right.
That I got.
Winner.
I won. Gotcha.
I'm a winner. Oh, my God. The dude next to me probably lost that, in one hand.
He made up
$100 a hand.
He made up for you.
Right.
Crack me up.
Anyway.
You're the big winner.
Thanks, bud.
Yep.
Winner.
Who else?
Hal,
what's happening?
I'm in Denver, but
you know what 34 degrees feels like then.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll be glad to get back. Well, it was 35 down there the other day, I guess, after I left. So.
Oh, wow.
I found that guy.
No?
I just sent it over to my private detective a while ago. I made some progress on it because I thought I had it from intelligence, but the information, as much of it was on there, was wrong. I talked to I talked to one of his relation, got a few hints, and the guy used to work, I talked to them, and they're going to help me, but I finally just turned over to my private detective about an hour ago, because I got to get it done.
Yeah.
And the attorney just keeps dragging her feet, and I'm just really fed up with her. Be the last deal I do with her.
How long do you think it'll take this guy to find him, would you guess?
I think he's in California, so he may find him in the next hour. He's usually real quick.
Yeah. Cool.
So
this has been quite a journey for you here. Obviously a unique scenario, but because
I had
sticking with it.
I had to had it under contract in the first 5 days that we found it.
Yeah,
and
you need your next one to just be a no-brainer to make up for this one. Probably the next three.
Yeah. Well, you know, these kind of deals are kind of weird anyway. I mean, this particular one's kind of unusual.
This is pretty unique. I mean, this is a title. The closer made a mistake, right? If somebody's on and not aware, Hal, like you just said, had a deal under contract with the seller, found a buyer all within like a week, and then they did a title search. And when the seller bought the property previously from the previous seller, so this goes back and right a transaction.
Yep.
The title, either the title rep or attorney, whoever closed it, forgot to have the deed signed. I mean, they missed like one of the biggest pieces of paper in the whole closing packet.
Yeah, no kidding.
The deal was still closed as if everything was signed, and now it's come out that there's a cloud on the title because the prior transaction, which is a couple years ago, if I remember right, was it
9 years? Properly? 9 years ago.
Okay, so almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
Wasn't closed properly. So now he's been trying to track down that previous seller to get a signature that should have been taken care of. So, you know, I've been around this for a while now. I haven't heard of a title company missing a signature on a deed. So this is a very unique circumstance, obviously, that Hal finds him in the middle of. But anyway, the quick version. So,
you know, one thing I think the guys should know, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but at least down there, my other attorney recommends you do at least a 25-year title search, or 50 years is even the best. It costs more, but you know, those things can screw you up. And this,
you know,
attorney,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that the title company is going to guarantee that their title work is correct. So we could pay for it, but at the end of the day, if they're comfortable with what they found at normal price, that's always what we proceed with. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Anyway.
Sometimes going back, though, against a title company, it can be, it takes time, and
yeah,
some of them aren't too anxious to do anything about it, but they will.
Right.
So, at any rate. And the guy had title insurance. If it comes down to that, that's our next step. But I've had that thing extended 3 times now.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's created. Yeah. I mean, this thing should have been done weeks ago. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here it is. Yeah, earning your pay on this one. That's why I was thinking the next three ought to go really smooth for you.
Well, I don't know. That I got the one on the only other thing I got right now that, well, we are working on a couple other deals, but the one I told you had 9 houses. He did send me all. He sent me the addresses, so we've been doing research on that.
Out of his price,
you know,
play. They're all 10.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and he's never given us the price what he wants, but they're all tenant occupied. And most of them have.
What's it rented for? Just give me one. What's it rented for?
Well, he told me on the 9, he does over $100,000 in gross a year. And
okay,
that figures out about, no, not yet. But what I didn't want to, because I was coming out here, I told him, send me the info, and then I called him back, and he sent it, and I'm looking at it, and I said, as soon as I get back from Denver, I want to sit down with him and get the specifics on it.
So he said over 100. Did he say 110 or 180?
He said over 100,000, and that's 8,300,
oh,
you know, a month.
Well, right.
If you average it.
By 9 houses?
Yeah, and they're almost all of them are 2-bedroom, 1-bath. But I looked at some of them on Google, and boy, I mean, this guy, they're not a typical, well, I don't know if they're typical or not, but they're nice houses. They look nice.
So it's about $950 a month, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's about really, especially on the 2-bedroom, 1-bath, that's about, you know, 7.5 to 9 is some pretty. He's got a couple of them there a little bigger. He's got one split level, and one that's another one that's a little bigger, a ranch. Most of them are kind of like bungalows, you know. But
you've got to get rents because that's your anchor. I mean, let's call it. We can make some speculation. Let's say, you know, we said over 100 grand a year. Let's call it 110 divided by 12, 9166 a month divided by 9 properties, 1018. So that's where we're being a little conservative. Say it's 950, right? And then times 70%, 665, times 12, 7980 net for one of them. And then if kind of rule of thumb, right? Buyers want different things. But a landlord buyer who wants or who buys a project that needs work, they typically want, you know, like a 14, 16, 18% return on the money first year because they have to put work into it. A turnkey rental, a lot of times you can get away with that 10 to 12% because the tenant's already there. And there's no work. You just buy it tenant occupied. So if we take that 7980 net and divide it by 0.12 or 12%, then that's a turnkey investor, decent little house, tenant occupied. They pay about 66.5 for it. So your number's got to be better than that to mark it up to that. But that just gives you kind of a ballpark.
Well, I would
think it's based on the rents. We're making some assumptions here, obviously.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you got this recorded so I can back over it tomorrow or the next day. But the other thing I was thinking, too, I'm just going by, a guy that wants to sell them all, he's not going to sell them unless he sells all of them at one time. And I think the heating and AC should be pretty good since that's what he does for a living. And I look back at every house to see when he bought them, and he bought them for cheap, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, if you think he wants to move them, then you've got to get some word out there that you're looking for investors who are buying a small tape or multiples at a time. Got a pack of 9 deals that'll be coming to market soon. If that's your flavor, let's chat. Because what you want to know is, talk to some buyers and say, hey, I'm still negotiating price. What do you look for? This is a packet of 9 deals. What are you looking for? And then you can talk to them about how do you buy multiple deals at the same time. And they'll tell you exactly how they run their numbers. And based on that, you know how to run your offer because you can run your numbers through their eyes. You just have to buy less, you know, cheaper than that.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, see if you can find some multi-deal buyers. I mean, they're definitely out there. No question.
Well,
you want individuals with cash that are looking to do this, large portfolio landlords. Talk to property managers in the area. Say they've got a pack of 9 coming. Who does that fit your radar for? And see if you can get any, they probably won't connect you to them, but, you know, hey, how do they run their numbers? Here's how I'm running the math, whatever. Have that conversation. And also real estate funds that are buying in the area. So you can reach out to, you can look them up online, right? You can go into, you can use FreedomSoft to find cash buyers. And you're looking for, sometimes it'll just say fund. I mean, it'll say XYZ Real Estate Fund LLC. I mean, a lot of times that's pooled money, but if you see that they've bought a couple hundred deals in the last few years, pretty good chance there's a lot of cash sitting there, and have your skip tracer try and locate them. And then you can also, you can use list source, right? So when you buy the data on a city, we don't exclude duplicates. You want duplicates. So you can go back to that CSV file and sort it by owner and get those in order and look up the duplicates. And if you've got something that says that, you know, looks like a pooled funds type of source or there's a ton of activity, then those are the people you want to start targeting in front of this.
Okay.
So.
Well, give me some ammunition.
But, yeah, there'll be big money. Every major market has big money buying. Pooled money sources have been the largest buyer of single-family homes since the last crash. So.
Okay.
Rents, rents go up when real estate markets correct. Rents, well, I should clarify, rents on single-family homes go up when real estate markets crash because demand goes up. Like the last time, foreclosures everywhere. People who lose a house, they don't want to move into an apartment. They want to move the family into another house. And so demand goes up, single-family homes. And so, you know, pooled money realizes that. And so they're buying single-family homes, and everything is based on the rents. That's what – that's the performing factor, right? If rents go up, you can sell for more. So take that same house, Al, that we were just – we rented at $950, and at 12%, you can sell it for $66.5 to a turnkey buyer, right?
Yeah.
If rents are forced up and they go to $1,100 times 70% – 770 times 12, 9240 divided by 12%. That house is now worth 77 grand.
Wow.
Because rents just went up. Right? Because
yep.
it's all based on the monthly rent.
Huh. Okay.
So, anyway. Side note.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, find your large portfolio buyers and your institutional money in town.
Okay.
And have a conversation. Even if it doesn't come through, you have a reason to talk to them now. Say, hey, I'm putting together a nine property deal. They're all single family homes. You know, here's what I know out of the gate, yada, yada, yada. They're owned by a guy that owns an HVAC company, right? So the systems in the house are in good shape, all tenant occupied. You know, is that something you're interested in? And then, you know, talk to them instead of how do you evaluate one house, how do you evaluate a package of nine? So
yeah.
Even if nothing comes of it, you're going to meet some big money buyers through the process, which is perfect.
Which will be good, yeah, for the
yeah, because you have three to five of those. You can sell as many deals as you want. So.
Hmm.
Yep.
Sounds good.
So far, I think John's the only one who's sold deals to institutional money, but he has a group in his hometown there that they have like 30 or 40 million to spend in single family homes in one city. And these are, you know, $20,000 to $60,000 purchase prices. So you can
wow.
do the math on how many properties they're looking for.
Wow.
And those buyers are all over the place. So yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of money out there.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
I just want a little bit of it.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it's a good reason to talk to some different buyers.
Okay.
Yep, yep. Any other questions?
Not for me.
All right.
Well, thank
Who
you.
Else? Yeah, you're welcome. Who else? All right. I'm going to assume we covered everybody. So any questions the next few days, obviously send them into the coaching email. Stay on it. As always, a lot of good things happening. So let's go as little time possible from your question to an answer or some feedback. So we eliminate downtime as much as we can. So send those questions in, everybody. Have a great afternoon or evening, wherever you're at. Talk soon. Good call. A lot of good stuff happened, as always.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye, everybody. Take care. Yep. Talk soon.
Go Broncos.
Yeah.
Go Chiefs.
I'll stay out of this one. All right. See you guys. Take care, everyone.